Meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. This is Brenda speaking. Welcome to ATRT3 Review Leadership Call Number 1 on February 25th, 2019 at 20 UTC. Attending the call today is Cheryl Langdonauer and Pat Kane from ICANN.org. We have Jean-Baptiste Nagar and Brenda. And please remember to state your name for the record. The call is being recorded, and I'll turn the call over to Jean-Baptiste. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brenda. And on today's agenda, so we have the terms of reference, ICANN60 for the informal meeting, discussion on the face-to-face meetings as suggested by Cheryl, then a review and approval needed on the suggested plenary call agenda, which is this Wednesday at 21 UTC, then any other business, and then confirm decision to reach an action items. Is there anything else you would like to add on today's agenda?
So, Jean-Baptiste, right. this is Pat. One of the things I'd like to add under the suggested plenary call agenda number 4, in between terms of reference and timeline, a sub-bullet called work plan.
All right.
Actually, Pat, do you want to shuffle this agenda a little, and without getting into terms of reference discussion, get rid of the plenary call agenda, because I suspect that's a bit of a no-brainer once you've added that bullet in there. That looks to me like a perfectly reasonable agenda for our next call, and then we can move on to the other items and perhaps work backwards to the terms of reference. Which might be a more substantive discussion.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
All right. So move on to point 5 then.
Yeah, and you've made the adjustment to the addition to put the work plan in.
Yep.
All right. So is there anything else you would like to change on this, apart from work plan?
This is Pat. I'm good with that, Jean-Baptiste.
All right.
Just with the face-to-face meetings, you may want to already highlight a couple of sub-bullets because there's two aspects to the face-to-face meetings. Not everyone will have, of course, even received information from the constituency travel as yet. So rather than deal with it as we haven't got this and what do we do about that and how are we supposed to blah, 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 how about we break it into two, LA meeting, and then things like Brenda created a page, which I assume means that then there's also going to be an advisory going out of the team looking at the dates, et cetera, or concerning the dates, et cetera. So,
sorry, Cheryl, there is some noise on the line from Patrick, I think, so I couldn't catch what you said just last.
You couldn't catch what I said from where?
Like 10 seconds ago?
Okay, right. As Brenda has created the wiki page, I assume that also means that the advice will be going out that may not have gone out to our members re-travel before we hold our meeting. So just in case, let's break up the item face-to-face meetings into two sub-bullets, one, LA meeting, logistics, and two, future meeting planning.
All right, and on that, Cheryl, I just wanted to mention that we have received some update before this call today, and normally the review team members will receive the email today, so they will have received it before the next plenary call.
So are you suggesting then that means we needn't break it into two?
I mean, I'm more than happy like to see whether there are any questions on the LA meeting logistics. So we can leave that to the agenda. That's fine. But I just wanted to mention that they will have received information about this meeting from Trevor.
Delighted to hear that they'll have heard from CT in advance. But I don't personally think that's a reason why we shouldn't break it into two.
Yeah. Teresa, you have your hand raised.
And sorry I was late on joining the call. I actually like the idea about breaking it into two because it does allow for a concentrated conversation on the upcoming meeting and anything that might come up around that, and then also keep on the agenda, sort of the thinking and preparations for any subsequent ones. So I think that's a nice way to balance that out. Oh, and Cheryl, thank you. You guys started ahead of time. You guys are like an airliner train that leaves early. You know? Okay, I'll put myself back on mute now.
Okay, and see, not I know we're at this particular item is well down into the agenda, but we figured we'd get rid of some of the easy stuff first and then come back to the discussion on the terms of reference. Otherwise, everything was going to be squeezed into the last 3 minutes. And that's not how Pat and I roll, is it, Pat? We like prior planning to prevent the insert the rest of that sentence yourself.
Absolutely.
You guys scare me. This is great. Okay, I'll be quiet now.
All right. Pat, are you good to go then with those modifications on the agenda for four?
This is Pat. I'm good with that.
All right. Did you want to lead off on that call then next time, seeing as I led last time?
Sure.
We may as well look like we're sharing and caring. All right, then we'll just... You know, you pop to me and I'll pop to you as the urge takes us. That's fine.
Good. Sounds good.
The item here on transparency concerns, I did want to know whenever one uses the term concerns, I assume there are some, as opposed to that we are going to discuss the matter of transparency. So is there a complaint? Is there experience from APRT? Two that I am unaware of. Why are we concerned about transparency? Or are we simply looking at transparency aspects of our work? Is your hand up on that one?
No, I forgot to put my hand down.
All right, Jean-Baptiste, can you help me understand the use of the term concerns in the agenda for item for our call number four?
Well, Sherry, that was based on the last discussion on the plenary call. If I recall correctly, that's what you and Patrick wanted to have added to the plenary, to the next plenary, if I recall correctly. Nega, if you want to jump in.
Thank you, Jean-Baptiste, and thanks, Cheryl. What I wanted to highlight here about the transparency item is the discussion that started in the Skype chat room about, I believe it was questions that Pat may have posted about transparency of the meetings, and I think we provided some information on that. We are happy to elaborate on the plenary call about the transparency associated with all the meetings and calls, participation of individuals as observers and participation of individuals in person for face-to-face meetings if they choose to do so. So we can shed some light on that for the review team to gain a better understanding if you think that would be useful.
Okay. Thanks for making that clearer. I guess I would then... look at it as just, you know, ATRT transparency as opposed to concerns, but that's probably my hypersensitivity to to flagging off certain words. But yes, we obviously need to agree on a number of things, and a bit of background would be useful. But I will hasten to add that right back to ATRT1, we welcomed observers to all, including the face-to-face meetings, other than when in-camera sessions were specifically called. And I think we've got a strong set of precedents to work on. And, yeah, ATRT operator, transparency, when you're dealing with transparency, kind of needs to be properly dealt with.
Absolutely, Cheryl. And, yeah, we can definitely change the title of the topic and not phrase it as transparency concerns, as it does have a negative connotation, but instead talk about it as guiding principles for the how the review is being operated. We can also make it very clear to the review team, and we have had this happen in the past, if there are conversations that are something the review team feels should go off recording, we also have a way of handling that, in that we can typically, at the request of the review team, for example, pause recording, have the private conversations that must be had, and then once the review, the recording goes back on, we will, at a very high level, summarize the conversation without divulging the details and the private information, so to speak. And the same can be said about observers. If someone's in the room and the review team wants to have a private discussion, the observers can be asked to leave the room. So we can highlight all of that for the review team so the operating guidelines are clear for everyone.
That would be most welcome. We did touch on that, I believe, in our last discussion, because that's certainly the way that that I run meetings, and I believe that would be the way Pat would run meetings as well. But it does also mean that we may need to couple a conversation with transparency albeit perhaps briefer conversation with the review team about confidentiality, because if one is going to work under those rules, then one also then doesn't report with attribution out of such in-camera sessions. It's very important that non-attributed confidentiality is exactly that, and it also allows us to look at whistleblower issues, which I know has been a conversation in the last couple of ATRTs as well, with at least ATRT1 and I believe ATRT2, but correct me if I'm wrong, having set up a separate email address so confidential information could come into the review team during the year. So, yeah, we might want to look at those two things coupled. And, again, a lot of that will be drilled into greater detail at the face-to-face meeting as well. Did ATRT2 sign any form of confidentiality expectation documents or anything that they may be privy to? I know ATRT1 did.
In terms of the ATRT2, Cheryl, I will go back and have the team check. I don't believe there is anything that comes to mind right off that. Well, we can certainly check to see if there is anything that is of confidential nature that cannot be shared openly.
No. That would be useful, but that's not what I was asking. ATRT1 team members did sign confidentiality documentation in our first...
Oh, I understand. The non-disclosure agreement.
I am unaware of ATRT. Right. It may be that they are never exposed to anything confidential, and that's great.
That is correct.
But it's no good being exposed to something confidential and not having confidentiality documentation in place.
So,
yeah, exactly.
So Cheryl, in the bylaws, sorry, Teresa, go ahead.
And Nagar, why don't we go back? Usually, for the review teams, if if there's anticipation that there may be a request for confidential documentation, then we look at having something signed. So we'll go back and come back to you with that. How does that sound?
Okay, thanks. It's just if there's a pro forma in existence and it's easy to run through, I'd rather have people, you know,
absolutely,
tied up
absolutely
with stuff before we get into problems. Otherwise,
yeah,
you know, it takes half a day in a face-to-face meeting to draft something that could have been off the shelf and done before we meet face-to-face.
Perfect.
Okay, right. Pat, anything else on that meeting then?
Nope.
Okay. Well, the other items, the informal meeting and the face-to-face meeting is just to-ing and fro-ing, is it not? We're going to be dealing with that in the session during our next meeting tomorrow. And the informal meeting, you've got the doodle out already. Will we, then it should be closed by our plenary meeting, so we should have an indicator of when that hour is likely to be. So, nothing to discuss there, or did you have something you wanted to discuss with Pat and I on that?
No, I mean, this was, as an FYA, especially what I have added was the schedule of face-to-face meetings. I was wondering whether there was something more in detail that you wanted to discuss there, which is why I had placed the timeline that Patrick had provided. If you wanted to get back to that, I was not sure.
With the what you've got in front of us for the face-to-face meeting on the screen now, I mean, that's the same slide as we'll be using for the meeting tomorrow, I'm assuming, because it's got all the necessary information.
All right.
I don't think it needs anything extra. Regarding the informal meeting, you indicated in a message, John Baptiste, that because of the informal nature of the meeting, there would be no ability to provide either a Adobe Connect room or remote participation. But do we actually have a place to house said informal meeting that is not the VeriSign the private room that Pat also mentioned, because I suspect that if VeriSign was offering up their private room, we may indeed be able to conference call in people. I'm just guessing on that, Pat. Perhaps you can help me with my guesses.
Yeah, this is Pat. The VeriSign room does have a conference call opportunity, so we will have a phone in the room.
Jean-Baptiste, have we got a home for our 1 hour somewhere in Kobe, or are we taking VeriSign up on their generous offer and therefore will be allowed to have a conference calling option?
I mean, go ahead.
Sorry, Jean-Baptiste, I just wanted to know, Cheryl, we appreciate the offer. I don't think it's going to be an issue, but let us go back, please, to make sure that everything from the meetings team side can work out as well. And I'm sure that we can soon confirm the time and the availability for the meeting to take place in VeriSign's room. Pat, if you don't mind also dropping us a quick note with the time and dates that you have in mind for the availability of this room, and then we'll make sure we do our due diligence on our end and verify that with everyone.
Yeah, Nagar, this is Pat. Since I'm the head of our VeriSign delegation, I will make the room available as to whatever time we decide we want to meet.
Oh, there we go. Okay, very good. Yeah, that's fantastic. So it basically comes down to making sure that the review team members can decide on the right time to meet, which I think the discussions around that have already started, and then we can let you know so we'll get the room as needed.
That is correct.
Very good.
But the optics of the two choices of taking up VeriSign's generous offer and having, because I think there's only about eight of us that are going to be on site in Kobe, it limited to only those on site and available at the popular time versus being able to dial in, is quite significant. So it's kind of important to ask that question and discuss it at tomorrow's call as well.
Absolutely agreed.
Okay. All right, so does that mean we're back to item number two of our agenda, working in almost reverse order, and we get to look at the terms of reference document?
That's correct, sure. That's the last point on our agenda. So, yeah, if you wish, I'm more than happy to check that on screen. Just 1 second.
Now, just as you do this, I am always highly wary of giving a group, let alone a group where we have some very busy volunteers who are easily frustrated, not your leadership team, I'll hasten to add, but there are people out there who feel their time is very valuable. Obviously not Pat and I. If we give people a 15-page document in under 24 hours notice for them to have well and truly digested, contemplated, perhaps read, not in their primary language, and got back to us about for discussion, I think we're going to have to take it on the chin. So apart from the questions that certainly Pat and I have on this document, we also need to plan how we're going to manage the expectations within the group of this. And apart from anything else, I'm going to go to you, Pat, because I need to go and throttle a dog who wants to bark while I'm in a meeting, that the first word I see missing off all of this is draft. So with that, I'm going to go on mute so you don't hear me yell at the Rottweiler.
All right, this is Pat. So John Notice, one of the things that I was thinking about doing since this document is going to go out in a short order for the rest of the group to try to digest is I want to convert some of these pages into probably three or four slides and then send those slides to you for inclusion for Wednesday.
That works.
Okay.
Also, okay. I mean, if there are any specific sections where you would like me to prepare slides, then just send them to you for review, and if you want to modify them, I'm also happy to do that.
So what I wanted to, what I was trying to capture as I walked through was there are a lot of things that we could take a look at that are contained within, like the mission and scope area. There's some additional items that come out of some Workstream 2 discussions. You know, taking a look at, what else do we think we want to add? So as an example, in under mission and scope, it says, we may assess these areas, but we're not limited to that following. What does the team? Yep, exactly there. What does the team want to take a look at specifically? Because I think there are people who come with some ideas in their own mind already as to what areas they would like to see more accountability or what areas they're concerned about transparency, so that we could talk about how big, how small, how prioritized this whole thing looks. But right now, if you were to just take this on face value, there's a ton of stuff that we could take a look at. And so I'm just trying to get an idea or start to talk to the team about how do we cull this down into highly prioritized and a manageable chunk of work that we can get done in 12 months.
Nigar, you have your hand raised.
Thanks, John. But Patrick, I think that's a brilliant idea. The more discussions the review team can have upfront about the scope and the items that the review team is interested in looking at, particularly keeping in mind, obviously, Workstream 2, as you noted, and the areas of overlap. I think the more successful and productive the face-to-face meeting is going to be. Another area of consideration for you might be to start looking at areas of expertise of each of the review team members, because once you select scope, it will be very beneficial to know their areas of interest are for everyone in terms of their expertise, and be able to put people into groups if that's how you choose to do so, in terms of having smaller work groups focused on certain scope items.
Thank you, Nagar. This is Pat. I think that's exactly where I'm where my mind is heading, because on page 4, when we talk about the objectives, those objectives really come out of a triage or a prioritization of all the different scope elements. And that's really where you, where I think you start to talk about work parties, and those work parties would be formed based upon the skill sets and interests of the members of the group, so that we could work in discrete pieces of work to drive out specific looks into specific areas.
Absolutely. You know, other work that can be done ahead of the full-blown scope discussion should be for the review team to think about the reporting structure within the smaller working groups and how the data will go through the working groups up to the big, the whole review team, for the leadership to look at it, for the review team to look at it, to reach consensus, what the presentation method is going to be in terms of talking about findings and the recommendations that might be formulated as a result of the findings. So there is definitely a lot of work to be done ahead of time, and these are all really good discussions to have.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
And those process questions are ones that we can also start doing I'm assuming we probably won't meet the week before COVID because people will be traveling. But that doesn't mean in that week while people are traveling and even while they're not checking their emails, doing their banking and managing their stock market investments during the ICANN meeting, that they can, well, come on, Pat, you know that's half of what the bandwidth in an ICANN meeting is used for, that they can also, do some of that interaction asynchronously using either some Google Docs or some email list discussion on some of that as well, because these process questions are kind of vital. If you don't get them done ahead of time, then they will slow you down. Just on the general ownership of the document, though, I would strongly suggest the term draft becomes right up and very obvious at the front of the document, because this is not a construct of the ATRT3. This is a construct, a template, which is a nice starting point, but it hasn't been adopted, owned, or otherwise become ATRT3's tool of trade just yet. And to that end, can I please plead that we use some more general terminology in some of the placeholder text. So, for example, on the decision making, which what are we talking, page 5 or something, if memory serves? No, it must be page 6 then. I know I read it only a little while ago. Levels of consensus. There we are. With 10, I was up. It only felt like page 5 to me. This is a perfect example of where I would like reference to all other review teams struck from the document. I don't want to see SSR2 or anything else in this document. We can say other review teams have found, but let's otherwise we're going to have, but we're an ATRT, not a blah, blah, blah. So, the precedent is, in fact, that these are the standards used in the GNSO PDP process, and have been adopted in recent cross-community working groups, which I think is a whole lot more powerful than what the SSR2 did or did not do. So, you know, this was the same set of standards that was adopted for the cross-community group on not only accountability work stream 1 and 2, but also for the IANA transition. Let's not worry about, you know, where these precedents are. The precedents are set, and in fact, ATRT1 used these standards. So we can just present these as a set of precedents which we would encourage the review team to adopt. So you see what I mean? So we can sort of sanitize our document a little bit before it goes to be released into the wild for the group to look at. The other thing, if we go back to membership, I know this seems perhaps silly of me to ask, but we did actually get permission from each of these people to print their names in a public document, did we? I know you had us all fill out things, but have we actually got sign-off from everyone for them to be listed and indeed for their attendance records to be listed? If not, we probably need to or double-check. And then going back to page 3, I seem to be doing everything backwards today. And again, I am a day ahead of you all. Going back to page 3, I kind
Sharon,
of wondered, yes, I kind
before
of
we move to page 3, Nagaz or Henry.
Fine, Nagaz, go ahead.
Thank you, Cheryl. I just wanted to actually address at least the 2 points that you've mentioned so far. On the reference about the adopted strategy in terms of consensus reaching, that's a very good suggestion. Of course, we'll go through and clean that up and use the suggested language, as the president said, by GNSO. We'll go through the document and clean that up. As for your second comment regarding the listing of the names of the review team members, there was a questionnaire that we had shared with everyone at the very onset of the review starting, and the questionnaire, actually one of the questions on there was for the publication of the names or the table of information that you see on the wiki and in this document. I'm happy for us to go back and double check the language of that questionnaire to ensure that it does allow permission for people to opt in to release this information to the extent that it is, just to ensure that everything is good to go. But just wanted to highlight that to hopefully alleviate some concerns, if there are any. And with that, I'll go back on mute and allow you to get your third point.
No problem, Nika. Cheryl here. I assumed that, because I filled out that questionnaire too, that everyone did. But I don't know, therefore I'm asking. And it's not gonna be great if, you know, number 11 didn't fill it out and we don't find out until we publish number 11's name. You know what I mean? So that's
of
just
course,
more a can we please double check? And they also need to make sure that they are aware that things like attendance records, will or won't be, but hopefully will be, part of the public record as well. I mean, I'm all about transparency, as Theresa knows. I'm an oversharer. So back to my question on page 3 then. I kind of wonder about the necessity of, well, first of all, having much to do about the public comments on the 2018 public comments regarding short-term and the specific reviews as well. But I certainly wonder why in this document we're talking about the fact that the second Registry Directory Service review, you know, asked and the RDS who was review team, you know, submitted the documents. I'm really not certain what that has to do with our terms of reference. Some of those paragraphs makes sense, but parts of some of those paragraphs I go, and this has got what to do with us? So maybe a bit of sanity checking there might be useful, but I'd welcome Pat and other people's opinion on that. But that's just
happens to jar with me. And the only other thing I wanted to raise on this document is when we refer to the limited scope, the option three preference from the ACs and FOs that did certainly occur in the dim dark distant past was extremely relevant in the dim dark distant past where we were back then when we hadn't completed work stream two recommendations and in particular the ones on accountability. So I'm not suggesting that that doesn't belong in the document, but I think we do need to recognise that we are now well aware of what the recommendations are out of work stream two, and what the .org is up to is looking at the aspects of implementation. We kind of can't have ourselves tethered irretrievably back to something in 2016 when it's now 2019, because the opinion of the community we sought in 2016 was based on us having been up and running by no later than 2016-2017. So we kind of need to recognise that somewhere. And that's possibly a larger conversation, but I suppose we need to prepare ourselves for that. So I'd just be a little bit cautious about how we manage the terminology about limited scope. Pat, go for it, mate.
Yeah, this is Pat. So I agree with what you're saying about the verbiage that's in there, Cheryl. But I took that more as representative language as to what we would put in when we filled out ours, as that being kind of where we are. But I do get your point that it could be misleading that someone is saying, when someone reads this, they would be like, well, that's not where we are. So I hear you. But again, I took it as representative, and then we would write over that to make what makes sense today.
Pat, yeah, that's exactly it. Sorry, Cheryl. Just wanted to confirm what Pat said. That's exactly actually the intention behind it. This document, obviously, nowhere has even really officially started the terms of reference. So we just have some guiding content in there for the types of information that can be populated in various sections of the terms of reference. And it is entirely up to the review team to look at the content and decide how you want to formulate everything and what you would like to put in for scope and everything else that carries through in the terms of reference document.
Great, thanks. That I guess comes back to, and I'll stop now. Well, I'll stop on this bit now. The importance of having draft, and if we can watermark this document with draft across the pages, that will help. But we have real novices appointed to this review team who, for example, may take this as gospel, not as suggested at, you know, lapse on optimal text. And I'd rather make sure that, you know, the terminology of draft is really obvious. There's a whole lot of really useful stuff, and this is an important head start on what I think the end document will hopefully look like. But we need to be, as we found out, very clear where, you know, even the difference between the proposed specific review procedures, the difference between the 2017 and the 2018 draft was lost on some of our members, so we certainly don't want, you know, this document and later versions of it to cause confusion as well. Pat, I would hardly call you a novice. I'm pretty sure you know how to read a document. But the other thing is, and I would love to find a way to manage this expectation, or perhaps it's one of my deep-set fears, and that is that having worked with some of the people on this team before, we need to make sure that everyone kind of realizes this is not an opportunity to make recommendations which are in the nature of, for example, getting into some sort of codified environment, things that were indeed quite specifically not supported in Workstream 1 or Workstream 2 of accountability. So if you lost your battle on a particular aspect of, dare I say, use an example, on transparency, if you didn't win your personal battle in the transparency sub-team of Workstreams 1 and 2, our review team isn't the place to win that battle. That's kind of not likely to end up in our scope, I sincerely hope it doesn't. So again, it's managing expectations of our review team as well as of the community. I think the review team may be quite surprised, or some of them may be quite surprised, to see the importance of the GAC's role in influence and public comment on policy development and what the importance that this needs to take in the work of an ATRT. I know the community was very surprised about that when we got ATRT1 off the ground, and I suspect there will be parts of the community which will still be surprised about that when they see the work we could be doing in that space as well. Okay. So what's then going to happen? We're going to get a few slides. Are we going to send this out then as a slight modification on what we're seeing now, or what Pat and I are seeing now, immediately after our meeting? To some extent, I'd rather give people the draft document after they've had a high-level introduction to the document and they've had a look at it on their screen first. What do you feel, Pat? What's your gut feeling on how we let this loose into the wild?
So this is Pat. I think what we do, Cheryl, is that we slap draft on here as a watermark and send the thing out with some kind of header that says, or some kind of introductory statement that basically says, the contents in here are example text, not the first draft or the first cut of our own terms of reference.
Yep. Okay. That's fine. Are we going to ask our highly keen review team members to remind their communities when some of them immediately re-release this document to indicate that it is now not the gospel known as the terms of reference to DRT3? Or are we going to ask them to hold off until we actually have a consensus agreed document out of the RT before they release it to their communities?
Yeah, great question. And I think that that's wording that should be added to the introductory text that basically says, you know, as this is merely a template with example language, please do not send it around until we have our first cut, so as to avoid confusion between example language and real work that the team is going to be doing.
Okay, that works for me. At least if we've got that in an email thread, we can use that when we get hauled over the coals for it later.
You know, if we're going to create problems either way, Cheryl. So I think that I'd rather the team start reading now and be prepared on Wednesday, as opposed to having to worry about somebody who wants to, you know, make hay with whatever we do later. Because you know that we're never going to win completely on this anyway, right? All right.
We didn't step up for these jobs to be in people's Christmas cards list. I'm sure of that.
Exactly.
So staff, is there anything we still need to discuss, or do you reckon we're in pretty good stead for this upcoming meeting?
So Cheryl, I had a couple of questions I just wanted to pose to staff real quick. And you, having done ATRT1 and been on other review teams, it would be helpful to get your opinion as well. So one of the questions I had was, has any review team ever thrown to the community a request for items or areas or suggestions about what should be taken a look at from accountability and transparency or SSR or whatever in terms of what the review team was?
Hi, Patrick. This is Nigar. To the best of my knowledge, after the new bylaws have gone into effect, the review teams have not consulted the community yet to ask what could or should be included in the scope. That is not to say that you can't. It might actually be a really good idea to have a discussion with the community on this. I just don't know that it's been done in the past. One of the reviews, the RDS review, there were a lot of discussions before the review even started amongst the community to talk about possible scope of the RDS review in light of the work that was going into effect with GDPR and everything else. But again, that happened before the review had even started, and it was a much higher level discussion at that point in time. But how you choose to select your scope, at the review team's level, and you can decide if you want to consult anyone outside of the review team within the community for that.
Thank you, Nigar. So Cheryl, do you think that would be something we should talk about on Wednesday with the whole team, or just avoid it?
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
Cheryl. Let's see what Teresa wants to say as well, and then
okay.
I'll jump in.
One of the things that has come up, one of the things that has come up is not the specific consultation of what the scope of the charter is specifically, because the review team sort of consolidates that, but as review teams have gone out to do public briefings or updates or exchanges about where they are with their work, and I recall this was a case of, I believe it was ATRT2, if I'm not mistaken, they held community sessions, and then oftentimes in those discussions, there was some input from the community on, have you looked at this from this lens, or has this issue been addressed? And the review team's then in a position to say, yes, we decided to address it this way, or we decided not to address it. I think, Pat, you had made the comment earlier that given the year time frame for this, and also the potential opportunity for everything to be thrown in or to keep it focused, sort of finding that balance of the engagement with the community versus retaining what's a manageable workload for the review team is obviously something that has to be navigated carefully.
Yep.
So we're happy to help and support you in any way whatsoever, with whichever path you decide to go.
Okay.
The way I approach it with an ATRT as opposed to some of the others, and community engagement obviously suits some more than others, but we need to recognise a couple of things. Even ATRT1 had extensive ICANN community consultation, right? We had a block of time with every component of ICANN at one or more face-to-face meetings where we, early in the year, we actually did the come talk to us, we want to hear your words, and then later in the year did the this is what we've heard and this is what we think we may very well be saying type stuff, right? So there was the gathering of info and then like any consultant would do, hear what people want to say to you and then tell them what they've said to you in a way you can charge them for later. That type of thing, right? Now, ICANN was very different in terms of where it was in accountability and how it has its own accountability, certainly in the APA world, but right back where ATRT1 was, which was running under an affirmation of commitments, to where we are now in the post-new bylaws land. and I guess apart from anything else, even helping the community remember that. Because strangely, not every part of the community was as dedicated and totally immersed in Workstream 1 and 2 activities. I know it's astonishing to think that we couldn't ask anyone at our meeting to tell us all about it, but they weren't all engaged. And so we might need to do a bit of caring and sharing. That said, the big advantage we have with an ATRT over other specific reviews is the fact that what we also have to focus on is that policy development piece, which means at an upcoming policy meeting, it seems fair and reasonable to engage with ICANN community about ATRT stuff. So that's one of the reasons I would argue to actually have a face-to-face meeting wrapped around the upcoming Marrakesh policy meeting space, because to get feedback from the community and indeed from the GAC and the board on the aspects that we need to look at about their work and how public interest is met and how community does or doesn't manage to have influence over policy development, et cetera, et cetera. That's an ideal opportunity, and that's unique to our particular mandate. So, you certainly would have, in my view, a tougher time justifying meeting of, some other specific review team where you shouldn't have a problem justifying meeting with community for our, if that is indeed what we want to do. Did I make any sense there, Teresa? Is that why your hand's still up, or have I gone off into la-la land and you want to tell me I'm crazy?
No, I just forgot to put it down. Sorry.
Cheryl, I want to tell you you're crazy. But anyway, so I think that makes a lot of sense, Cheryl, from the standpoint of what, if we're meeting April 3rd to 5th, that means that we have till like June 4th, 60 days, to create our terms of reference, work plan, and timeline. And at that point in time, we're only, two or three weeks away to Marrakesh, that we could actually schedule a review of that with the different groups and kind of go through and say, what have we missed that's really important to your community or your constituency or your advisory committee, right? So I think that might be really a good way to do that and plan that for Marrakesh.
Got a big green tick from me, my friend.
All righty. Done.
And my reference to 42 days is not actually a joke, even though I do still like to reference Douglas Adams' books wherever possible. I think, it is manageable to do a 30-day plus exercise as opposed to a 60-day one on this stuff if we're smart about it and we actually get the preparatory work done and we are highly focused and very productive in the face-to-face meeting in Los Angeles. And if we can't do that, then we shouldn't be having face-to-face meetings. But that's just me being a bitch again.
Cheryl, this is Pat again. Well, I completely agree with you, because I would rather be writing recommendations and reviewing and refining recommendations for the better part of our time together than all this up front. So the more we can do and cut through to, those things that are really, really high priorities and really meaningful to both accountability and transparency in the future of ICANN, that's where I want to get to and spend more time really writing recommendations.
That works for me. And if we could actually have the objectives sufficiently fleshed out in this TOR document so that during our face-to-face meeting we can also have the proposed work tracks, did you call them, work groups, whatever it was, your terminology, I like it, doesn't matter.
Work parties,
thank you. The work parties, actually start to, get to know each other and and, you know, do the all that awkward beginning stuff, that first date stuff that always happens for the first few weeks. If we can get that over and done with face to face, you know, in a day of our time, that would be very useful too, because then you've got people who are more comfortable working with each other, and you'll also know where your problems are going to be. And Pat, I'm assuming that you and I will be ex officio on every one of these work parties anyway, but we may have to more closely monitor some than others, yet to be determined. But
no, I think that's right, Cheryl. And given the diversity of our experience, I think that there will be some that will naturally be, you know, I'll take the lead on, and some that you will naturally take the lead on.
Are you giving me all the problems, are you, Pat? Thanks, Don.
I might. All right, so I've got a hard stop at 4, but I have one last question, and that's on page 9, Jean-Baptiste. And the question I have here is under the changes to review team and dissolution of review team. I think a little bit about SSR2 from this particular when I read this. Even though it was termed a pause in terms of what we did with SSR2, it felt a lot like a dissolution and reconstitution or a reaffirmation of the participants in that. So I know that ICANN org and the ICANN board looked at that pause as a fiduciary responsibility. Should we capture something around that in this document as well? Because as I read the bylaws, the only way to blow up a review team is for the review team to blow itself up. And do we want to capture somewhere here that we have an obligation as a review team to manage to a budget, and the board will come in and tell us to do something different if we haven't done that? And I'm not looking for an answer right now. I'm looking for a thought for us to think about that a little bit.
Well, if I can jump in, I think tying
Please.
The fiduciary responsibility of the review team itself, or more importantly, Pat, sadly, you and I, into this is a smart thing, because even people who've been involved, and I apologise for the bird chorus now as opposed to the dog chorus, but yelling at the wild Goliath doesn't get me anywhere. Even those who are experienced with policy development processes in the past, and so think they know how entities may operate, unless they were part of Workstream 2 leadership, they really won't understand the expectations of the fiduciary responsibilities and budget replannings and limitations that we are going to be working under. So it's probably smart to have, I know it was introduced in the kickoff meeting, but if we were to ask 20 questions about the kickoff meeting, I'm not sure everyone would pass at 70% level. Have a think, staff. You might be real good at putting a sentence in there that does remind and ties irrevocably into our TORs, those fiduciary aspects of what we should be doing.
We'll give that to Cheryl and see how to capture. Sorry, Nagar, go ahead.
No problem at all. I just wanted to highlight that, in fact, as part of the terms of reference, there is actually a section of the document that focuses on the budget associated with the review specifically, but if you want to expand it beyond that, we can certainly think about it and work with you guys to capture what is needed.
Yeah, this is Pat. The only reason I bring up specifically, because if that's a tool that needs to be used, let's make it a terms of reference issue and not a bylaws issue, because I know under SSR2, when that happened, you know, there were some folks who were thinking about, well, we're getting outside of our swim lane from the bylaws, even though I think that the board may have been right, or ICANN org may have been right, but it'd be helpful to have it here so that it says, here's a terms of reference item, as opposed to having a bylaw discussion.
So Megapath's point is specifically tying it into the dissolution aspect.
That's correct.
It's not changing elsewhere, but it's having it pinned into this sale as well.
Cheryl, yes, understood. Yeah, we've captured that, and we'll definitely look into it.
Okay.
All right, with a minute to spare, have we mucked it up too much, people, or are we okay to go?
I think we're 30 minutes over, Cheryl. I don't think we... I've only got this as a 30-minute meeting.
Well, then can I suggest in future, it's not booked as a 30-minute meeting, because that's bleeding ridiculous. I'm happy to have an hour booked and end at 30, but if that's the placeholder length, then I'm afraid staff need to make a different booking of the placeholder.
Yeah, I think so. You and I like to talk a lot, so we probably need an hour.
Hell yeah. Yeah, right. That's just giving our name and address in an hour, isn't it, Pat?
Yep.
All right, mate. Staff, is there anything else we need to do?
If we have just a few minutes, I just wanted to mention under AOB that as part of the presentation that was done on the last plenary call on fact sheet, Shala had mentioned that the review team was to identify a liaison to review different fact sheets and liaise as necessary on those figures and sheets. I was just wondering whether you wanted to mention that during the next plenary call, knowing that this liaison role is open to anyone, the review, not necessarily leadership. It can be a review team member as well.
Okay, fine.
Thanks, all.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Much needed. Bye.
Bye-bye.